This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD.
Oh my God, he's a Taurus and Aquarius compatibility is poor.
Okay, that should be the cold open right there. That's the cold open. Cheese situation.
That's a whole lot of cheese there.
Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 KOGO. I am Scott Lewis, the CEO and editor-in-chief at Voice San Diego, and I'm joined, as always, by managing editor Andrea Lopez Villafana. What is up, Lopez?
Hey, Lewis.
And joining us this week is education reporter Jacob McWinney. What's up, Jacob?
I'm doing okay.
Coming up on the show this week, the race for county supervisor is heating up, but we're not talking this week about the one that opened up after Nathan Fletcher abruptly resigned. No. Republicans think they can take the North Coastal seat back from Supervisor Tara Lawson-Reamer. She's running for re-election, and now there are two Republicans, two prominent ones, looking at taking her on. We'll talk about what's at stake there. SDSU is in the middle of separating from the Mountain West Conference. SDSU's in its last chapter of its big power move in sports. Is this a good sign or a bad sign? The university submitted a letter of intent to split with the conference, and now it must pay its old rivals. We'll check in on what's happening. And finally, what's with all the billionaires and their interest in investing in San Diego lately? We'll discuss. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Jacob, you are, we're not officially saying you're co-host.
Oh, okay. I have like a proving period,
well,
I guess.
Well, we're just going to see how it goes. Okay,
yeah, we have to jump you in. Yeah. Prepare for that.
Got it. Yeah.
But I do, one of the things that has you in a higher regard with me lately is,
wow,
is your take on it's going to blow.
Yes.
All right. So I will start using it's going to blow a lot, but I think before I make it a thing that I did, I want to give it to you first. I want to give you what you gave me.
That's really kind. So you want to be able to sort of like put in the lore that this is my take?
Yes, but then
from
abuse
this point
it
forward.
Yeah, forever.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Understood.
So if I do my time now, you get it. Okay. All right. So explain it's going to blow to us.
Okay, so It's Gonna Blow is this documentary about the really vibrant, and you'll see why this matters later, up-and-coming music scene of San Diego in like the mid-90s that really consisted of a bunch of post-hardcore bands. Mm-hmm. There were Drive Like Jehu, Click-A-Tat-A-Tat-A-Towie, Antioch Arrow, all of these really, really influential bands that had people saying that San Diego was going to be the next Seattle. You know, the grunge scene had been really big, and people were looking at our little, you know, quaint village and saying, this is going to be the next place on the West Coast where a new genre is going to explode from. There were record label battles over who gets to sign who. And after all of that, it didn't really blow. Sort of fizzled out. And ultimately, my kind of unified theory of how to approach San Diego is that San Diego is the town where it's going to blow.
It's always going to blow.
It's always going to blow. Yeah.
And now that you've infected me with that phrase, I do everything with it. I gave a speech to a group of older engaged folks in La Jolla the other day, and I structured it around the concept of it's going to blow. And it was brilliant. It worked.
Did you give Jacob credit?
Yeah, totally.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Yeah, was that recorded? I'd love to see. Was I in a footnote?
No, I'm sure we can call the host and see if they remember that part. But there are a lot of things in San Diego that are always going to blow. The Padres, yep. They were going to blow. It's been a little rough for a while.
And sports is the perfect example of this. I mean, whether you talk about the Padres, who acquired all these superstars and now mm-hmm. seem to be kind of poop in the bed, I guess, is the kind way to put it. Or you think about the Chargers, who every single season they were supposed to do something.
They were going
to
blow.
But you can expand it to all sorts of elements of San Diego.
Sports arena is going to blow. Yep. The new City Hall is going to blow.
Mm-hmm.
Very weird word.
It's going to blow.
Fair, yeah.
It's not going to blow up. It's going to blow.
It's going to blow.
Yeah.
In the good way. All right. One of the things that was going to blow, mm-hmm. and I think it's blowing, maybe.
In a classic San Diego style?
No, in a real, like, it's actually blowing up, which is it's San Diego State.
Yeah.
And San Diego State and its athletics are on now a 5-year or more trajectory of they're about to blow.
Yeah.
They want a new stadium. They got it. They wanted to get the development and everything done, and they wanted to get an MLS team in to prove that they could do that as well. They got that.
Mm-hmm.
The basketball team reached the very last game of the season, which you want to do, which is the championship. They did not win it. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But they got there.
They got there.
There's also actually educationally, there's this big movement to make SDSU an R1 research university.
Right.
Which, again, is just more blowage, I guess.
All right. Well, of course, the education reporter's got to get real for
a
second.
Well, you know.
Sports, whatever.
That's what you hired me to do.
This is a university. Let's talk about education for a sec.
All right. The softball team, I'm going to bring that up. They went to the World Series, or they won the Mountain West Conference tournament, almost got to the World Series of Women's World Series.
Oh, you know my cousin's on that team?
What?
Yeah.
Who?
Julian.
Sellies?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
You know Julian Sellies?
She's my cousin, yeah.
We didn't talk about this.
I wish you guys could see his face right now.
I know her mom. I met her mom at the game a couple times.
Yeah, she's, Norma.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's great. She's a great hitter. Okay. Well, anyway, the last chapter of San Diego State's ascendance in this moment, the moment where it truly blows, is if the school becomes part of a Power Five conference. There are five power conferences, as they're called, in this country, mostly around college football. But they're all sports conferences, right? So the SEC, the ACC, the Big Ten, Big 12, and the Pac-12 are all these Power Five conferences. And SDSU really wants to be a part. They don't want to be part of the little Mountain West Conference. Utah got to go to the Pac-12. You know, SDSU's wanted this.
Yeah.
Now, the new stadium and all of the success seems to be lining it up for that. They sent a letter to the Mountain West and said, hey, we're going to be done with you.
Yeah.
We're done with your little world.
We want to see other people.
Yeah, basically. I like to think of it. So imagine you have a partner that you live with, mm-hmm. right? And you hit them up and you say, listen, you know, it's not working out, but I want to stay for the rest of the month. But at the same time, you're up against this, like, your lease is about to expire. And so you have to make this decision. Do I leave before my lease expires, or do I leave after the lease expires, and which doubles how much
live.
You have to pay? Yeah.
Right.
But you let, you know, your partner know, I don't think it's working out. Over the long term, I think we're going to be leaving, but can we maybe extend how long I stay for a bit? Mm-hmm. And your partner says, no, we're done.
Yeah.
You know, shuts the door.
Pack your shit up.
Which basically is what happened with the Mountain West.
Yeah, the Mountain West Conference said, thanks for your letter. Send us $17 million.
Yeah, which is the exit fee for this conference, which would have doubled had they decided to leave after June 30th.
Right. Yeah. So the problem is the SDSU has not been invited yet to a Power 5 conference or the Pac-12. It sounds like the Pac-12 is probably the natural place, but the Pac-12's got a lot going on.
Yeah.
There are a couple of teams, California teams, or universities. They're actually universities. Mm-hmm.
they do things other than
educational
sports.
Educational institutions.
You know?
Yeah.
They are leaving the Pac-12, and that's causing a lot of tension problems. Mm-hmm. And so the Pac-12's got a lot going on. They're like, hey, we want to...
They're also sort of negotiating this new media rights deal that may actually preclude them from inviting anybody new before they kind of wrap up those negotiations.
Right. So... we're all pretty interested in this story, and I think will the university be able to make that payment? They want to do a payment plan, and the Mountain West is like, no, just the check's yeah, good. Yeah. You could just send us a check.
Here's our Venmo.
Pretty much, yeah.
So we'll be interested to see, but that is the last step that they need to take to, I think, blow.
Yeah.
Finally.
And it's an interesting situation because I think a lot of things are now up in the air, right? San Diego State took that letter as the breakup letter and said, you're out on June 30th. And so while there was this tension about whether or not they leave before June 30th or after June 30th and have that $17 million exit fee they have to pay double to $34 million, now it just looks like they're out of a conference.
Yeah.
And at the same time, their like new flame has not extended its hand, but... their ex has like slammed the door and thrown everything out on the curb. And so it's I think it's a weird position for them to be in.
Another update. We wanted to follow up last week on the homelessness discussion. So if you haven't checked that out, Jacob was part of a roundtable we did about the city's decision to ban homeless encampments across San Diego if shelters are available and within two blocks of certain sensitive areas like schools and riverbeds and shelters at all times, no matter whether there's shelter available or not. You provided a great input of people you talked to who were encamped on the streets and their uncertainty about what's happening. So I wanted to follow up. One thing I don't think I articulated well enough then, but I think of all the things that vote did or didn't do, and we're going to see, it was, and I think Joe LaCava said this on the days, that it was the best, most comprehensive and deepest discussion about homelessness that the city council has ever had, I think. I think they've done a lot of discussions about specific shelters here or a policy there or whatever. They've probably done thousands of those over the last many years. But I think this was the first one where the biggest questions about homelessness were grappled with,
mm-hmm.
and where the depth of the problem was and the lack of shelters and all kinds of things, all of the biggest issues of homelessness were discussed. Now, it doesn't mean that they came to the great resolution or whatever, and I think it really is problematic. I don't think we talked about this enough, that it was a 5-4 vote on such a divisive and important step for the city to take, to be divided, especially along like historically racially segregated lines too. Like that's a little, well, not a little, it's very disturbing. So I think there's a lot of issues like that, but I think it is fair to say that was like a huge discussion. And I'm in a way, if that's the only thing we got out of it, I think that's a good step to acknowledge as a community that we all need to have that level of discussion probably every few months now until we see real progress on things. So that's one thing I wanted to get across.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the second vote is happening next week.
Right.
And then after that, once the mayor signs it, I believe, and remind me if I'm confused here, but they set like a 30-day after he signs or 30 day after they open the first safe lot, right?
They said they wouldn't start enforcing until 30 days after the first safe parking lot is opened. And he says that'll be next week or a week from the next few days. We'll see if that comes forward or not. I do think I do think there is a chance that the problem will show some signs of improvement if a lot of people are allowed to move into that safe lot rapidly without the enforcement part of it. But when that gets filled and when the next one gets filled, that's where like the real issue comes. Mm-hmm. What happens then? Are they going to push people around, create chaos, even more violence? Or do they, I don't know. That's the biggest question going forward.
I mean, I think the vote as a whole is it's a really strange position. I think that a lot of it is pretty discouraging, but it also does seem to be a call to arms in certain ways. You know, for example, San Diego Unified recently offered up some properties for the district to potentially lease license for free. And then the city would essentially take control of this and hire a contractor and pay for it, a service provider to manage these sites. There are multiple sites and they could set up parking, safe parking in all of the lots, but also a really interesting thing that school board member Richard Brera told me is that he hopes that they can set up actually safe camping sites inside the old campus at Central Elementary, which is a pretty novel idea, I think, at least for San Diego, and would offer, you know, a whole bunch of benefits from the fact that there's already electricity and lighting and Wi-Fi and
playgrounds
and a playground.
Restrooms.
Yeah. And restrooms.
Yeah. So I think that's exactly what I think the best case scenario would be is that if we continue to match the energy and anxiety and the suffering on the streets with policy discussions at that same level, that maybe it will provoke everybody to pitch in where they can and for every day from now forward to be an opportunity for these leaders to put forward another place where somebody's stepping up and offering space, another place where somebody is offering a unit or a hotel conversion or something to make possible the great transition that they hope to see, which is the encampments move off the streets and into safe somethings.
Yeah.
Because right now there's energy and there's a measure to push them off the streets, but there's as they all admit, not enough places for them to go. So that needs to be resolved somehow. So if they're going to keep the energy on this side, then where's the energy on the other side, and will it continue? So That was an interesting discussion.
And kind of, the sooner the better, because these things take a long time to roll out. And so these potential sites at San Diego Unified Properties are unlikely to come online anytime soon.
Right.
You know.
Also, another update on that front, on July 12th, another court will be hearing and ruling on, you might remember this, increase to the hotel room tax that was put on the ballot right before the pandemic. It passed, but not with 2/3 of the vote. And the city and others are arguing that because it was a citizens' initiative, it did not need 2/3 of the vote, even though the city attorney had said herself twice in the ballot language that it does need 2/3 of the vote. And that is one of the legal problems with it becoming law still. And so that the courts are still deciding, you know, back and forth, whether that is something that could be implemented or not. And in July, we might have an answer to that. Now, that was money that was supposed to be set aside for a convention center expansion, of course, road repair, but also homeless services and housing. So that could unleash a significant amount of money if that were to come through, or it's just another court date and nothing will happen because it's going to blow, but it didn't. Lastly, I wanted to get an update from you. You did a story this week about the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency.
Yeah. So basically, Jesse and I worked on this story for a while. A Wired reporter a little while back got this FOIA or received a database back from this FOIA request that showed that Immigration and Customs Enforcement had issued hundreds of thousands of these summonses called 1509 summonses. And they essentially are supposed to be strictly for customs, illegal imports, these kinds of investigations. Broadly, you can understand ICE's work to fall into kind of two categories. One is like goods and the other is people. And these summonses are supposed to be strictly in the goods category of enforcement. This Wired reporter was kind enough to give us this database that he'd received, and we scraped through it and found hundreds of summonses that were sent to San Diego area organizations, from government organizations to a whole lot to utilities providers and also some to schools. We were able to get a hold of some of these summonses that were sent out, specifically one to Sweetwater and one to San Diego State. And the San Diego State one was very interesting because we also got a whole email chain of an agent speaking to, you know, San Diego State officials, and we found that ICE was requesting personal medical information of two students, and that specifically COVID-19 vaccine status, mm-hmm. which is a very strange thing if you are using a summons that is supposed to be
for goods
and not people. I mean, obviously, a lot of this is speculation, but it would seem that, especially given the timing of this summons, which was sent shortly after federal officials made it COVID vaccination required to gain permanent legal status, mm-hmm. it would seem that these summonses were being used for immigration investigations, which is not what they're supposed to be used for. And there's a long history of ICE being criticized by legal experts, even Senator Ron Wyden, for example, for misusing these summons and issuing them overbroadly for things that they are not meant to be used for.
Oh, fascinating. It's amazing what happens under the radar and surfaces like this.
Yeah. And this is especially under the radar because these summonses are administrative subpoenas and they don't require judicial oversight. So there's a lot of this is just drowned in fog, and it's difficult. It's a very opaque system and a very, very opaque agency.
You can read about that more at VUSD.org/Jacob, but with a K.
With a K, yeah.
Okay, we heard this week about LA Rams owner and owner of, frankly, many, many things, Stan Kroenke. He owns the Denver Nuggets of the NBA fame, obviously the new NBA champions. Sure.
Wow, congratulations to that man.
Yeah. I'm sure he appreciates that. he owns, his wife was from the Walmart fortune. Obviously, his big renown in San Diego is that he created the stadium in and paid for the $6 billion stadium in Inglewood, California, that the Chargers now rent for $1 a year. And a lot of people are like, oh, they're tenants in this guy's thing. They pay $1 a year for the best stadium that exists. So who's laughing now, right?
To be honest, this is news to me. I feel like my head is spinning. Why do they get it for $1?
Do you want me to do that?
I do want you to do that.
Do you want to do that?
Let's see how fast I can do this. Okay, so way back when the Chargers were trying to get a new stadium here and it was not going well, and they decided to give up and try to get a stadium with the Raiders in mm-hmm. L.A., they partnered with the Raiders and came up with a plan for Carson, a big stadium in Carson. Mm-hmm. They thought they were going to win because the other owners loved them. They're the old guard of heirs to the old teams.
Notoriously lovable Spanos family.
Yes, they thought for sure they had it. But this guy who has billions more dollars, Stan Kroenke, and was friends with Jerry Jones, the other, you know, most prominent person among NFL owners, mm-hmm. They sort of misinterpreted their position in the league, and the league decided that instead of the Raiders and Chargers idea in Carson, that the other owners liked the plan to build a several billion-dollar stadium and complex at Inglewood instead that Stan Kroenke had put in motion. And so the other owners felt bad for this decision, and so they said to Dean Spanos, they said, sorry about that, but you can have the second spot at the stadium. It's built for two teams. You could have your spot there. You get first right. And if you don't take it, then the Raiders get the opportunity to move there. Hmm. So in a way, the Spanos family was in kind of stuck, right? Because so they said, well, we'll go back to San Diego for one more year to see if we can get a new stadium here. And also we can't really live with the idea that the Raiders and the Rams moved to LA mm-hmm. because they were under the impression that the Chargers had a lot of fans in LA, and that if the Raiders and the Rams went to LA, then basically San Diego Chargers would just be a San Diego team going mm-hmm. forward. They would be stuck being the little billionaires instead of the big, big billionaires,
poor boys.
Right. And so they, the deal that they ended up working out was just glorious for them. And the other NFL owners just thought, well, they'll never take it because mm-hmm. they're just going to squeeze San Diego for a new stadium. They'll get their new stadium and they'll use this leverage to squeeze San Diego. And meanwhile, the Spanos looked at this and said, oh, we just pay $1 a year in rent. We have to pay a relocation fee, but even that can be financed over decades. Mm-hmm. And that's not that big a deal given the gobs of money we make. and so they looked at that and said, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
And so they spent a year here saying like, hey, maybe you could build a palace for us downtown as big and beautiful as this thing. And if you don't want to, fine, we'll leave. And the voters looked at that and said, no, we don't want to. You know, why don't we do something smaller? And they said, fine, we'll leave. And they went to LA to be there. And so the Kroenke's investment in that stadium in LA went from, or in Inglewood, from like $2 billion idea to $6 billion. It exploded in cost because of all these different things and these factors in that, which meant he had to take all of that cost himself. Mm. The Chargers had agreed to sell seat licenses, they're called, the ability to purchase season tickets at these facilities. It's like the right to buy tickets.
Huh.
But the Chargers and all that money would go to funding the stadium. But the Chargers realized, like, why would we do that? Why would we sell these? Because we're not on the hook. He has to build this stadium. We don't. Mm. And we're just going to rent for a year. So they didn't sell any of their side of it. And then Kroenke had to foot the entire bill, billions of dollars. So he hates the Chargers. And they're just like, and everybody always talks about the Chargers. Oh, they're just renting the stadium that he bought. They're renting for $1. They came out so good in this. They have a team. They get 20 years in the stadium for $1 each year. And then they get an option for another 20 years for $1 each year. And so it's like, it's great. They did great.
Well, you said one thing that I'm confused and curious about. How is a stadium built for two teams? Are there like three
different
locker rooms or something?
There's different locker rooms. There's different... They built it so that it can change branding really easily.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it, and all kinds of stuff like that. That was one of the conditions the other owners put on, and that mm-hmm. it needed to be able to accommodate two teams because they felt like the LA area could handle that.
Mm.
And so, it's an incredibly good deal for the Chargers. So I think it's misunderstood a little bit that the Chargers left. I think in their interpretation, they had no choice but mm-hmm. to leave. This was such a good deal. And if they didn't take it, the Raiders were going to take it. And, they just weren't interested in the puny $700 million stadium that we could build here, mm-hmm. right? Which would be an amazing stadium. But that's how that all worked out. So Kroenke's the guy behind all of that.
Got it.
So the news this week was that Kroenke had decided to become the lead investor, 90% of the equity of the new Midway Rising project in the sports arena area was now his.
Wow.
And he was the guy in charge of this. And so this consortium of partners that had gotten together, of affordable housing developer Chelsea, Zephyr developer housing, a guy named Brad Termini, who, by the way, is also one of the owners of the new MLS team. He is the one, kind of the principal involved in this whole consortium. He and then the Legends Group. This is the group that sells tickets to sporting events and promotes things a lot and has the connection to Kroenke. And they all pulled in Kroenke. And now Kroenke is the 90% investor. So we have this awkward situation where the Spanos family left San Diego, decided not to invest in San Diego. And now the guy that sort of built the home for them to move in L.A., is now investing, you know, a lot of money into this project. There are a lot of sports dudes out there very excited about this because this guy owns an NHL team, an NBA teams, mm-hmm. all these football teams. So he's obviously going to bring a big, you know, an NBA team or something to San Diego when he builds this new arena. Stop. He's not going to.
Stop that.
This is not a sports story. He is investing in the housing development, several thousand new units that are going to be built in a nice area near coastal San Diego. He's very excited about that. They're going to build a new arena, but it's going to be a small arena for concerts and for, you know, minor league hockey teams and stuff like that. Okay?
Now, Scott, I know you're saying this, but it's going to blow. I mean, you don't know.
One of these sports dudes?
I will say, if an NBA team came to San Diego, I would lose my mind. I would start watching the NBA again. I love basketball. Is, you know, people have opinions. Life. People have opinions, but the fact is, basketball is the best sport.
It is. You know? It's a good
it is.
Sport.
It's you know, it's great.
It's a smaller arena. They could absolutely fill it. People would go gaga for it. It would be fun. It's not happening. It stopped. Just put it away. At least not because of this. Maybe some other reason. But if you built another arena in San Diego, would have to compete with this. They're not. They can't. They can't build this and have an NBA team. It's just not happening.
Hmm. So are you saying? Oh, okay. I see what you're. So the arena that they planned for is not going to be big enough for an NBA team.
Right.
So, but building that would mean that they wouldn't be able to build another arena for an NBA team.
Right. Because the other arena would need the things that this arena is going to take, you know, the concerts and the smaller events and stuff like that. And so
you're telling me that Kroenke coming to build this arena is going to mean that there's never going to be an NBA team in San Diego?
That's what I'm telling you.
I hate Kroenke. I'm very against this arena now.
Well, you're not alone.
Very against this arena now.
you're not alone, but that's, I just want to make sure.
They made this decision that they're not going to make it a big grand arena.
Yes, so I learned this. So the sports arena is what, like 13,000 seats right now. The new one would be like 16,000. Mm-hmm. An NBA team, NHL team usually needs like 20,000. But to get to that next level, you have to build a whole new like concourse level on top of the arena, and it just adds exponentially to the cost of an arena. So 16,000 seats you can handle. Mm-hmm. But at that next level, you got to add so much cost, all this exterior supports, all these, it's a whole new bowl on top, and it's just too much money.
But he's a billionaire.
Exactly.
I have heard.
I thought he just built like a $6 billion stadium up in LA. We don't deserve good things in San Diego?
No, this is what I wanted to clarify, is I think a lot of people are like, oh, dude's going to drop a bunch of money on this stuff. And we're going to get the shiny new arena we wanted, and Final Four is going to come here, and the NBA and all that. No, it's not. That area can't handle that, by the way, along with several thousand new housing units. They're going to build a little place for Neil Diamond to come. Well, I guess Neil Diamond's probably not coming.
So do you enjoy being the bearer of bad news?
I enjoy forcing San Diego to confront its darkest realities.
So yes.
Yes. I think San Diego's strong enough to. I don't know if you've heard me say that.
Scott, yeah, Scott, truth matters, but hope
also matters.
Did you
get that from someone too?
No.
That was a Scott.
That's me. Yeah. Okay. But that is the third billionaire that I have identified recently who's come in to drop some cash on San Diego.
Who were the other two?
The other one was Ron Burkle. Ron Burkle is an LA area billionaire who made his money from supermarkets. Mm-hmm. You know, Fred Meyer. You know Fred Meyer?
Mm-hmm.
These sort of supermarkets he helped develop, and now he's a billionaire.
Nice.
He had a big stake in Whole Foods for a while. That worked out.
Burkle does sound like a product that Whole Foods would sell.
He is the owner of The Wave, the San Diego women's soccer team, and they have been installed in San Diego. The next one, Mohamed Mansour.
Mm.
He is part of the $500 million ownership group, half and half, basically, with Sequan. Mohamed Mansour, the Egyptian, it's funny how every description of him is a British-Egyptian billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
So he is now here with his massive investment. They're going to build. We had a great interview with the CEO of the new FC San Diego or Tom San Diego Penn. FC. Yeah, Tom Penn.
Look at me, sports.
Yeah.
Well, so why does it have to be FC San Diego? That's a pretty boring name.
He said, well, FC is good enough for Barcelona. Why can't it be good enough for us?
That's a cop-out answer.
He said the biggest decision they have to make, is it going to be San Diego Football Club or Football Club San Diego?
See, these people are just not thinking big enough.
Well, that's the thing. If you're a billionaire, what do you got to lose, right? Like,
exactly.
Take some risks, right? But in a name instead of a submersible 12,000.
Exactly.
So I asked Saquon, you know, after decades and decades of people using Native American imagery in sports, like, you actually are, you know, part of that world. Like, you could use that imagery more positively or something. Why not do the Kumeyaay or something? And they're like, nope, absolutely not, not going there. And so I think they're just going to go with FC San Diego probably.
But what's up with all these billionaires?
And then the third billionaire is Kroenke. So now there's now all these big. So the question is, are we the big city now attracting all these, you know, investments, or are we like being like colonized in this like way of like people coming in? We set up these platforms and they're just like, okay, we will, we'll take the profits from that then.
Is this what Todd Gloria means when he talks about big city energy?
I think so, I guess. Yeah. If Burkle and Kroenke and Mohamed Mansour want to come buy stuff here, then we're now the big city.
Got it. So now we can move on to sexy streets.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us.
Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Masters program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com.
One of the things that was going to blow was the Democrats in San Diego. They were going to take over San Diego and start running things. It's going to be a new progressive future, right? Things were going to be completely different. The Democrats were going to be in power into perpetuity because of the demographics and all the Trump stuff, and just they had just established, right? And one of the big signs of that was that the County Board of Supervisors, 5 supervisors who oversee the entire county of San Diego. Now, the county, just for as a refresher, provides a lot of the softer services of government, right? The air pollution control, the food benefits, food assistance, healthcare for the poorest folks in San Diego. So they're not the ones providing like street repair in the city or police services in the city. They do help set the budget of the sheriff that does have the role in some of these cities and in unincorporated areas of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. They do have a county library system that goes outside the city of San Diego. That kind of thing. But, you know, again, it's a different. So if you have if you live in the city of San Diego, you have a city council member, but you also are represented by a county supervisor at the county level. Right. Yeah. And so one of the things that happened, Nathan Fletcher got elected, and then Nora Vargas and Tara Lawson Reamer got elected, and 3 Democrats were suddenly in charge of the County Board of Supervisors. And instead of rotating around who was chair, they made Nathan Fletcher the chair. for a couple years there. And he and the team really did realign the priorities of spending, labor relations, social welfare benefit, behavioral health issues. All these things were completely, the priorities were completely changed under this new Democratic leadership, right? And so that was supposed to endure. They thought that was going to be the new reality of county government for a long time. But I'm not sure that it's going to. So first, Nathan Fell, obviously, resigned abruptly after he was accused of sexual assault and of what he called consensual interactions with an employee at the MTS agency. And that effort to replace him. Now, there are two Democrats running for that seat, right? Janessa Goldbeck. And
Monica Montgomery
Stepp, and they are they're going to fight that out. And there is a Republican running for that, Amy Reichert, yes. Yeah. And so she just got the endorsement, I think, of the Police Officers Association.
Yeah,
and that's not the sheriffs yet. I'm not sure if they've made a call yet.
I'm not sure,
but they very well might go for her.
It's probably likely.
And so, but I think it's a pretty remote that the Republican would win that race, although who knows with these low turnout races. So we'll see how that goes. But in the meantime, Tara Lawson Reamer, a supervisor, is running for reelection. Her district changed a little bit. It now includes Coronado, Point Loma, and goes all the way down. It used to be sort of Encinitas over to Escondido. Mm. Now it's all of that. It goes down all the way down to Coronado on the coast. So she is running for reelection, and Coronado Mayor Richard Bailey made it clear for a while that he was probably running for that. Now, I made it clear he wouldn't say, I'm running for that, but he's been sending mailers out to, I got one, says, you know, it's time for a California comeback.
And yeah.
It's him all like,
yeah, I've been joking for weeks that someone needs to write the Richard Bailey is running for something article, because it was just so clear. I mean, he was posting videos on Twitter and sponsored videos on YouTube talking about, you know, how they could buy every San Diegan a Tesla for the same price of the MTS budget. Mm-hmm. So he was throwing punches.
He was talking about the crisis with homelessness and how he would deal with it better. Again, this flyer went to everybody or a lot, thousands of families across the county, he says, not just to me, but but
not just to you.
It does take a special someone to send out a mailer to everybody's house just about how cool you are, right?
I would respect that, honestly.
When you're not running for something, to just send a mailer out about how, like, you'd probably be into
that.
I
could do that. Yeah. It's pretty easy.
It's a picture of you and the pup.
I exist.
The one you like.
Yeah. I'm here.
I'm here.
Have you thought about me? Have you considered me? I'm not running for anything. I'm just here.
Well, there is a certain beauty in knowing that people know that you exist.
Yeah.
It's kind of terrifying also, but
yeah,
you know.
So we all assumed that meant he was kind of setting the stage for running for this county supervisor seat. But he went to climb Mount Everest. And when he came back.
Just cash.
Again,
you know?
It's what you do.
Yeah.
And when he came back, it looked as though another Republican was looking at this office. And that is a former mayor of San Diego, Kevin Faulkner, ran for governor, you might remember.
Yeah.
That didn't go well, but he ran for governor in the runoff campaign, and that didn't go well. But in the recall campaign, excuse me, and now it looks like he is going to run for office. Now, I couldn't confirm that explicitly with his team. I did confirm that that some of his supporters, I think led by the Lincoln Club in town, the Conservative Political Action Committee, business oriented. Usually supports Republicans, but makes a point of saying we sometimes support Democrats. Mm. But it's very conservative leaning. They commissioned a poll that apparently shows that his position in this race would be very strong. Mm. And so he wants to run. And so now we have a situation where these two guys might want to run against the incumbent. Now, Republicans famously are better at narrowing their field. They do not want two different candidates that they have to fund to go into this. And so they are I think pressuring Bailey to step aside. Now, I called him, got a quote from him. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Pretty good. Give it to me. It's pretty good in the whole like politics way of saying slightly mean things that we all go like, ooh.
So it's a lot to think about quote.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Quote, it's clear to me that the regional problems we face from homelessness to crime to the unaffordability of housing is due to years of bad policymaking. I don't have confidence that current or former regional leaders are up to the task or of addressing these issues in a meaningful way. I haven't made a decision, but I am strongly considering running for County Board of Supervisors. Did you see the shade in that?
That is a really spicy sort of subtweet, right?
Yeah.
You don't name them, but boy, you describe them.
That's some shade.
Yeah.
Lopez?
He could have just said regional leaders. He made a point to say current or former. Yes.
Former. So yeah. That's
cough,
the...
Cough.
Yeah. That's the attack.
And you know, this is a tale as old as time, right? You take a long weekend, go to climb the world's highest mountain, and you come back and someone's angling for the job that you were angling for.
Yeah.
But you never said you were angling for the job.
Yeah, but I mean...
But people know.
Yeah.
He should have known.
He'd sort of called dibs on it though, right? I mean, you don't run sponsored Twitter ads if you aren't interested.
If you just want the people to know how awesome you are,
okay, that's,
maybe.
That's fair.
It's an interesting race because I think that Bailey would probably win like the Republican Party endorsement if they had to fight because those guys are a lot more ideological and he's more willing to say things sort of directly in that vein.
Yeah.
Faulkner's always tried to have that like, I don't actually say mean things approach. But Faulkner has the better... Name ID, probably a little bit more money he's able to pull together. Probably in these races, nobody knows anything, right? Nobody knows what a county supervisor does.
Do you think there's a chance that they would both run?
Well, I do more now that he's given this sort of sign that he's not willing to back down. Now we'll see what happens in the next few weeks.
So obviously Faulkner has a track record, but when it comes to these sorts of things, oftentimes a track record can be a bad thing, especially in this new Republican world that we're living in where things are a little more squirrely and there's a lot more ideology as opposed to, you know, not more ideology, but definitely different ideology.
I think that Bailey would hit him on one main thing.
Homelessness?
No, actually, Sandag. You know how they all hate Sandag now?
Yeah.
Well, they all hate Sandag because of Hassan Akrata. Hassan Akrata is the one that says, like, if you want these climate goals, then you have to create a lot more transit and you have to charge people for driving. Like, I'm sorry, there's no other way to reach these goals. So you say you want these goals, here's how you reach it.
Yeah, he's the waiter who brought the receipt.
Right, exactly. Well, do you know why Hassan Akrata is there?
Judging from the way you frame this, I would imagine Faulkner probably had a role.
Faulkner's the reason. Faulkner very clearly stopped their choice of another person and supported the choice of this person. This Hassan Akrata has his job because of Kevin Faulkner, and Hassan Akrata is despised by Republicans across the region. So,
but are these Republican, you know, leaders or the average Republican who's walking down the street? I got to say, I find it hard to believe that the average Republican really even knows what Sandag is.
I agree, but they might have heard about the
driving tax.
The driving fee.
Yeah. And that pretty much...
The reason you have the driving fee is because of Kevin Faulkner.
Yeah. Boom. And that did a big... that played a big role in Laura Loughian's election over in La Mesa.
That would weigh down a lot. So I'm not sure if that's what they would do or not. But it'll be very interesting to see.
Are we going to see a mailer? Kevin Faulkner is the godfather of the driving tax.
I see it like on a crime show, you know, where they have the crime boss and then like the people on the side and their lieutenants. And
just for a record, Richard Bailey, you can't take that. But you can email me at jacob@vosd.org and we can start to talk about terms.
Or he's going to pull a Scott Lewis.
So that'll be interesting. Now, I like to focus on stakes. Mm-hmm. What's at stake here? I think it's important. So if they're going to talk about unaffordability of housing, and this is a Republican, what he would probably say is like, we need more supply of housing, right? But Bailey oversees the city of Coronado, and the city of Coronado is not allowing more housing to be built there. In fact, it's fighting that sort of thing. And so how do you square the need for more supply of housing if you are also, your entire effort has been to keep more housing from being developed in your town? Now, he has a couple responses for this. One is that Coronado is actually one of the more dense places in San Diego. Now, I need to fact check exactly what he means by that. But so there's that. And he says, and this is where I think the stakes play out, we need to build more in unincorporated areas of the county. There's, I don't know if you're familiar too much with this idea of urban limit lines, right? So these in throughout cities in America, there's this concept of maybe we should draw a line where the city stops and where wildlife can be, right? Uh-huh. And in this, we have gotten closer to that than we ever have over the last 20 years of discussion, mm-hmm. with the county itself doing a lot to stop development in unincorporated areas, in more rural areas, or this sort of thing. And so that is, I think, where this new front is going to be, where Tara Lawson Reamer is part of that group that says, no, the development needs to occur in existing urban areas, and we need to protect environmental concerns outside of those areas. Mm. And I think what he's saying is, nah, we should build homes there.
Nice.
And so when you talk about stakes, like, this is the kind of stakes at play where it's harder, it's more expensive to build in infill areas in places that are already developed. There's already opposition and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, if you keep building out into the wildlands, you're going to have more fire danger. You're going to have more traffic and impacts from automobile and commuting and just sprawl in general, taking away wildland. So that's, I think, the heart of this choice. You know, which side of that do you choose?
Yeah, that's an interesting dichotomy. And is it your understanding that Faulkner would take a different tact on that?
He would just never say. He would just be like, well, you know, there's a lot to be said about that particular problem, and, you know, we'll work through it as we get closer. And
so he's going to be the much to think about candidate.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast recorded in San Diego and designed to ruin your hopes for San Diego. Keep up with all of our coverage and big investigations with The Morning Report, our most popular product. Subscribe at vosd.org/morning. That's vosd.org/morning. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice San Diego. Andrea Lopez Villafana is our managing editor. Jacob McWinney is our education reporter, and Nate John is our excellent producer, who is very good at what he does, and I'm glad he's back. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.